This is Screen Cares. I'm Jenny.
And I'm Sarah. And we welcome you to our place to connect beyond the screen
and watch better together.
Today is a little bit unique for me, I think, because unlike a lot of times where we cover a really good movie, where I feel very compelled and drawn to wanting to talk about how the movie was constructed, who acted in it, the cinematography, any technical stuff, this episode will be weird because we will definitely talk about our movie, but we're going to talk about other stuff, and I'm giving you a lot of things this episode.
Oh, I love it.
So I just sent you a text.
So I am reading the caption on what looks like a photocopy of an old newspaper article. And it says, 2-year-old Sarah Wolverton, waiting to become an American citizen today, took a playful tour behind the flag in the Birmingham Federal Building lobby. Sarah, who came from Korea, and her parents, Art and Debbie Wolverton of Decatur, were on hand for the traditional Thanksgiving Eve naturalization ceremony. She was one of 13 children among the 125 people who became citizens. And the caption for this little picture is, patriotic peekaboo, because we see a very adorable 2-year-old Sarah peeking out from behind an American flag. I love it so much.
So I am sending this to you not because I just wanted to show you how like chubby my cheeks were back then, but because I don't think we've ever really talked about this aspect of like our backgrounds necessarily, but you may not know this about me, but I am a deeply patriotic person, deeply. And it's something that I feel very conflicted about, but I also feel when I've talked to other people about it, and sadly, it has been very few people that I've actually talked to about this feeling of patriotism, but I feel very indebted in a way that doesn't feel bad. It feels like I have been given a gift. And there is also like an obligation that goes along with that gift, that it's not a burden, but a responsibility. And I'm showing you this picture because I wanted to talk about what it means to me to be an American. And I really want to talk about what it means to be a citizen. And I think these are really big, important topics that we can talk about coming up on Memorial Day weekend, when for many of us, it's a great time to think about the loved ones in our lives who may have served in some capacity, or even if we don't know somebody personally who has served, to still think about the enormous sacrifice that has been made for us to enjoy the day off from work. And to enjoy all of the things that are much more important than the barbecues that happen on Monday, but just being able to live here in the way that we do live here. And for me, I wasn't an American citizen until I was 2 years old. I went through a process. I went through a ceremony. It was a whole big thing. And every time I look at my naturalization certificate, because I do not have a birth certificate because I was adopted, I am sort of reminded anytime I have to submit that paperwork, like, gosh, it is really special to be an American citizen, despite, you know, some of the very difficult things our country has been through throughout the period of its history. So here we are talking about patriotism.
Oh, Sarah, this is making my U.S. history teacher and like patriotic 4th of July loving self just like I have just a big stupid smile on my face because I think America is so much better because you're here.
Oh,
and I think that I'm just so excited to get into the movie today because I think it gives us an opportunity to talk about such an important subject. And thank you so much for sharing that too, because I think that it's a topic that sometimes people don't bring up, and it isn't something that we even as friends have directly talked about too much. I'm so excited to get into it. So Sarah, what movie did you choose as the platform for us to explore this topic?
This week, we are going to be talking about the movie 1917 that came out in 2019. This is actually a British film, and it was written by Sam Mendes. How do you pronounce that name? American Beauty dude, basically.
Yes,
Kate
exactly.
Kate Winslet's husband, basically.
Ex-husband. I always say Mendes.
Ex-husband, that's right.
I know.
Is it Mendes?
There's no Z at the end.
I just like a British, well, it's an S.
Mendes.
Well, yeah, it made it weird for me with the S at the end. I'm sorry, Sam, but your name made it weird for me.
I feel comfortable with pronouncing Sam.
I like it. Well, IMDb reduces this very big movie into a very incomplete description. April 6, 1917. As an infantry battalion assembles to wage war deep in enemy territory, two soldiers are assigned to race against time and deliver a message that will stop 1,600 men from walking straight into a deadly trap. It's rated R. It's 1 minute shy of 2 hours. And again, that was from 2019.
What do you feel like it's missing? That description.
All of the things, like the rat, the lady that was in the broken down building, the crazy scene with the German guy that the one guy wanted to save, and then he ends up killing him, at like all of the things.
It absolutely did. I think whenever we finished watching it last night, my husband was like, wow, that was just like 48 hours. It was just a very short period of time. And I think that the IMDb description, just like their assignment, was kind of short, didn't leave it the details. It's just like, hey guys, just go over there and deliver this message. No biggie.
Right. No, it's fine. I would send an email, but that's not working. So just please take this piece of paper, this like single, like handwritten piece of paper, and go deliver it across, you know, very, very deadly, arduous, horrible a pathway that it's not going to be good, but just do it or else everybody's going to die.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
No pressure.
My show notes said cell phones save lives because I was like, wow, this would have been a lot easier now. But
I love that.
Yeah. So yeah, it's a pretty simple plot. These guys just have to deliver the message, but there's so much more, like you said. I think if you want, before we get into what I am really excited to hear about your take on this, what would you give this as a screen shares rating? Because we don't just do the PG-13 R rating, because I think this earns its R rating because it's definitely graphic. But who would you watch this with? We've got our buddy screen, work screen, family screen, little screen, love screen, and solo screen.
That's hard. I watched this with my significant other, and I really loved doing that because we typically watch a lot of war movies together, and it's nice to see depictions of history on the screen with him because there's also not that thing that you have to do with kids when you see a dramatic presentation of some sort of historical event that's been like zhuzhed up a little bit to make it like fancier, more dramatic, more cinematic. You know how you have to say like, well, I know that it looks like a big deal right there and it was, but this is actually what happened. Like you don't have to do that when you're watching that with another adult. I would say little screen. And of course, with the caution that there is a lot of graphic violence and scary moments. But I think it's important to watch this movie with kids who are maybe exposed to violence in other ways, but aren't actually making the connection that violence equals injury to a human. And that is one thing that I did like about this, is that the violence, while it was graphic, while it was upsetting, while it was scary, actually reminded you that there are people behind those stab wounds, behind those gun wounds, behind these other kinds of wounds. It's not just like this John Wick situation where it's like, yeah, there's like bullets flying, everybody's dying. We don't know who it is that's getting killed, but it's people. And I think that's really important. So little screen with a caution. A
cautionary little screen. Well, so it's interesting. After I finished watching it, my 11-year-old was like, when can I watch that, Mom? Because he was sent to his room and wasn't watching it. And he said, can I watch it when I'm 16, 17? I was like, honestly, probably before that. And in my mind, the line for me with when can my kids watch it is, when will they not be kept up at night by the kind of graphic images you see? Because what I said to him was, there's just some stuff you can't unsee. And I totally agree with you, though, that I would want him to watch it at any point whenever he's starting to think that violence is fun or a cavalier feeling about it, or any time that they forget or seem to not fully appreciate the bumper sticker adage of freedom isn't free, that kind of thing. I think anytime the seriousness of war isn't understood, I think that it could really be valuable. I, instead of giving it little screen, will give it a family screen because I actually would love to watch this with grandparents and kids. I think if you're at a place where you could be watching this with someone who was closer in age to family members who maybe have stories of not World War I because it's not how long people live, but World War II.
It's not? Shoot.
I know.
I had plans. I'm really upset about that.
Unless you've got some like 150-year-old relatives. No, I think that it would be great to watch with people who had family members alive during World War II, Korean War, Vietnam, just to have that added texture to it. So I agree with little screen with an asterisk, and we'll add family screen.
I love that. I love that. That makes a lot of sense. And I think you're right. It is really special to do an intergenerational watch. I love that so much. So I am dying. Like, you were texting me. Like, I laughed so hard when you texted me about the rat just ruining everything. But what did you and Justin think of the movie?
Oh, we really like war movies. And so we had recently watched All's Quiet on the Western Front from 2022. So the most recent version of the film. And it was really a kind of cool pairing if you watch those two, because All's Quiet on the Western Front is based on the German side of that exact same Western Front, that trench warfare situation. And so it was even more humanizing for the Germans when we're watching this, be like, oh, those were sad, scared people too. And so it was bleak. It was definitely, you know, nail biting, and, you know, you're nervous and you're wanting them to make it with the message. I yelled at the TV. Justin was like, well, that's why you don't help Germans out of planes when they wreck. Like, he was, you know, there was just a sad moment.
Like, you knew that was going to happen, right? Like, I felt like that was totally going to happen, but it was still super upsetting. Like, I was totally crying when that happened. And so
I won't lie, naive me was like, maybe the German, they'll befriend each other and see each other's shared humanity and work together. Like, I'm so silly. I wouldn't do well in war. I wouldn't do well in war. So,
did we run out of bullets? I have some too. But maybe I can share with you.
Don't enlist me. I would not help. Although I was also texting you, Sarah. I was like, listen, if you had to go deliver some message to save some fictional brother, I would go with you, but I wouldn't like it. That was one of my favorite.
I also died of laughter.
I wouldn't like it, but we enjoyed it. We really enjoyed it. And it's definitely a kind of movie that we like. And it is interesting in the same way that horror movies can be cozy and the like, oh, I'm glad we're here and not there. But also it has that added layer, like you mentioned, of appreciating. And both of us like history a lot. And so we were definitely having kind of a sideline Google searches for, oh, that really was a real operation that happened, and adding new information to our database about the Western Front. So that was always enjoyable too. I can't wait to hear, how did you watch this the first time?
I watched it pretty much immediately when it came out on Netflix. I know we streamed it. Like, basically, as soon as it was available, we streamed it. I really wanted my dad to watch this because my dad, he has suffered with a lot of, like, pretty serious chronic health things ever since he was a kid. But there are a lot of military men in his side of the family. And I know for sure, like, I've had very, like, nice conversations with one of my uncles who has served. It is just so abundantly clear how much respect in my family there is for those who have served in the military and the toll that it takes. It is not something that you just walk away scot-free from. And so anytime there's a movie that comes out, especially if it's historical and from a time in which my dad did not experience, I think that it's a nice way for us to connect without the piece of, oh, my brother was there. You know, like if we were talking about Vietnam or something like that. I'm going to send you something because this is probably one of the most formative experiences of my childhood. And if you don't mind, I would love for you to read this.
This is a poem.
It is a poem.
In Flanders Fields. In Flanders Fields the poppies blow between the crosses row on row that mark our place, and in the sky the larks still bravely singing. fly scarce heard amid the guns below. We are the dead. Short days ago, we lived, felt dawn, saw sunset glow, loved and were loved, and now we lie in Flanders fields. Take up our quarrel with the foe. To you from failing hands we throw the torch. Be yours to hold it high. If you break faith with us who die, we shall not sleep, though poppies grow in Flanders field.
So, thoughts?
Oh, a lovely poem. I think I've read this before. I feel like, or maybe I haven't. It feels epic.
Sure,
I love it.
You have. Yeah. I'm sure you have.
Yeah.
And this is from 1919. This was actually written during World War I, the First World War, by John McCrae. I'm sure you've heard it or seen it or read it in any of your history studies or just like in Memorial Day things. Growing up, like, we were always listening to Prairie Home Companion, and Garrison Keillor read this on a Memorial Day special. And that really like resonated with my dad. Like, the words are very, it's a very grave poem, like figuratively and literally. And one day for Memorial Day, my dad actually read this in church, and he was a Presbyterian minister, and he couldn't get through it without crying there in the pulpit. And that was such an impactful moment for me as a very, I think, just, I don't know, disgruntled youth. I think I was 11 or 12 when I realized, it wasn't until that moment that I fully realized what it was that we were doing on Memorial Day. Like, we are not having picnics for the sake of having picnics. We are getting together to honor the people that can't get together with us and the people who have allowed us to do that. And it really wasn't until that moment that it really hit for me when I saw my dad's strong emotion about the sacrifice that so many people have made. And I actually texted my dad about it. And he said to me, I still can't read it without tearing up even when I'm all alone. I think the meaning is pretty clear. It's sadness for the loss of those who died and an exhortation to the feeling, to the living, to keep fighting. I can get with the sadness part, but the challenge to keep up the fight rings a little hollow to me sometimes, especially in connection with World War I. I think I really want to bring up this poem because of its meaning for me. It's a World War I poem. You know, this is a World War I movie. And it really truly is a reminder that death is permanent. These are real sacrifices. And I think what this movie does a very good job of is that we have close shots. We are following these two soldiers as they are making their arduous journey. Not unlike, you know, I was thinking a lot about like marathon, you know, like that whole actual journey. And we're not seeing masses of people. I'm kind of comparing it to Saving Private Ryan a little bit. Like, yeah, super bloody, just like this movie. Yes, there was a similar sort of like quest to go find some people and a small kind of isolated group of soldiers trying to do a specific task that was dangerous. But yet, I think this movie did a better job of reminding us of the individual cost of war.
Absolutely. And the film also had beautiful scenery bookending the movie. So it began with the soldiers laying in a field, this beautiful kind of bucolic setting. And then it ends with one of the soldiers also sitting in a field. And I think that's something that hits me about the poem is that it has this quietness to it and this, and it has this reminder that things will go back to quiet, but that you shouldn't forget. Like, those spirits and those losses are still there. And that for me makes it even more sad because it's not the triumphant yelling poem. It's a quiet reminder. Why do you think that the poem and war movies kind of hit close to home for you?
I do have family members who have served. There are a lot of folks on my dad's side that have served in some capacity. And they talk in a few words about the cost, the mental cost, the physical cost, the even spiritual cost that it has had for them. And I think that's there kind of in the background. And then on the other side, like on my other shoulder, is kind of the understanding that these are sacrifices that so many other people's family members or people themselves are making for somebody like me, who was not even born in this country, can, I hate to say benefit from, because that sounds a little bit parasitic. I get to have a safe place to raise my kids because of the things that my family members and many other people have made. And so when you see it on the big screen, it just hits at home because it's one of those things that you just don't know until you know. And unless you are serving in some capacity or in some sort of war zone, you don't really see it. We see it on the news, whatever. That's just not the same. And I think that cinema is really important for us to have that window into this very scary, very brutal, very real kind of experience that folks in the military might experience. Because if not for that, then it's sort of diluted to nothing. And I think in this visual age, like, we have to be able to see what it is that we are talking about.
And so to that point, what role do you think war movies like 1917 have in people's life? You kind of mentioned it a little bit when we talked about our screen shares rating, but could you speak a little bit more to that?
I wanted to talk about 1917 because our experience as an audience member was to follow the experience of these two, primarily these two soldiers that were trying to do this very difficult task. And I think what's really integral in war movies is to stop doing what so many war movies do. And that's the whole red shirting thing. Are you a Star Trek fan?
My husband is. And I have friends who are, but I am outside of the world looking in. So I'll have to have you fill me in on this one.
Well, I'm sorry to say that, like, this friend of yours is also kind of a Star Trek fan, only by proxy and by force. Like, I was forced to watch all of the shows, all of the different series, all of them, and all of the movies as a kid and then growing up. But so redshirting, like, in education, we know of redshirting as that whole thing that a lot of parents do, where they hold their kindergartner back a year so that when they enter kindergarten, they're a year older, they're developmentally and physically ahead of all the other kids, and it then gives them a little bit of a leg up, a little bit of a benefit, right? But way before redshirting was this thing educationally, it was a term that came from Star Trek because the, like, little peon soldiers or the little peon, I don't know, Star Trek crew members wore red shirts, and they were the ones that always died. And the New York Times commented on it and then created this word of redshirting. And, like, it's even used a lot of times today when there's criticism about Marvel movies or movies like John Wick, where you have sort of this faceless person. They're kind of a henchman. I read some article. I haven't been able to find it again, talking about the John Wick movies and the issues that it had with those, where it was, you know, oh boy, here we are with the redshirting, except we're going to call it the black suit in John Wick movies because all the black suit people die. Although, point, I think John Wick was also wearing a black suit and he did not die, but whatever. So it's really just that very important idea that when you have these faceless, personalityless, storyless characters that you're just seeing killed off in gruesome or quick ways, we just stop seeing that these are individuals fighting our fights. And so I think that's a really important thing in war movies and in cinema.
So to put this into a realm that I do understand, just so I make sure I'm understanding, the red shirting is done, like, the proverbial red shirt is put on whatever characters or group is kind of being killed en masse that you're not looking at. So in Star Wars, it would be like the clones and all the white outfits that you're not really thinking about them. Okay, that makes sense. And I do think you're right. A lot of war movies do that, where it's like, oh, that pile of bodies is not our main characters, who cares? But yeah, you're right. In 1917, there is a really concerted effort to humanize all of them, because even some soldiers that they just kind of meet the bodies along the way, they'll show maybe a little photo of a loved one that's in their jacket or something like that, just to remind you that they're connected to someone at home. And yes, I agree. I think that's incredibly important.
That was so huge for me, the photo thing. I'm glad you brought that up because, again, it reminds us that there are people that are also suffering through their loved one's deployment. The human cost is not just, you know, the people that are deployed, the people that are actively fighting, or the people behind the scenes and working. It's the people back at home, kind of like the Hestias from last episode that you were talking about. It's kind of all of us. And I guess that's what, so I'm feeling mad today. I just need to own that. And I'm mad for two reasons. And I wanted to talk about 1917 for the sake of my anger and my sadness and my responsibility that I feel as an American citizen. And one of my points is that Alex and I went to go see the new Evil Dead movie. I love the original Evil Dead. So we went to go see this new one as like a very quick like way to just sort of deal with the stress of a very not fun move last week. And sure enough, what always happens whenever we see some horror movie, we did not have the kids with us. In like the front row, there were like four or five very young children. And this is a gross, scary movie. I mean, hello, it's called Evil Dead. Super scary, super gross. And like, is this something that like you would take your kids to?
Is Evil Dead something I would take my kids to? No, I value going to bed before 1 o'clock in the morning and having room in my own bed. They would definitely carry those images with them. That's kind of the line I have, is are these images going to just take up permanent residence in your head? And right. If so, let's not do it.
Yeah, like, let's not do it. And it's sort of like the gratuitous aspect of it. And it reminds me of a time when Alex and I were in college, we got free tickets to go see this terrible movie called House of 1,000 Corpses. Super nasty. And there's this whole giant thing that was, you know, surrounding this very young kid being in the theater who was crying and saying, can I leave? And his parents were saying, no, you have to watch it. Like, we want to watch it. And this is a very, it's a gross movie. To me, there isn't a redeeming factor of that movie. It will not be featured on our show whatsoever. At least I'm not going to be bringing it, and I'm pretty sure you're not going to either. But it really had me thinking. In this age of book banning, in this age of extreme curating of our children's lives, what is happening here? Like, what is happening? And I was furious when I saw that Amanda Gorman's poem that she wrote for the inauguration, was banned from Miami-Dade Public Schools. And what shocked me is that, first of all, that they actually said, yeah, you're right, like, we're going to ban this. You're right, it's not appropriate. But when I actually read the form of the complaint, it said, it's not educational and have, because it also is not with good grammar, and have indirectly hate messages. And then, are you aware of professional reviews on this material? I don't need it. What do you believe is the function of this material? Cause confusion and indoctrination. That word that we hear time and time again. What also made me super pissed was that this person, I'm pretty sure, thinks that all Black people are the same because they think the author of this poem is Oprah Winfrey. And with all of the problematic, incomplete answers that this person has submitted on the form, Miami-Dade County Public Schools, I am calling you out, decided to take this material out of instruction. Now, when you look at this poem, there is nothing except for an acknowledgement that America is imperfect, America is in progress, and like we can work together and make it better. That is the message that I got. I reread it 6 times today, just making sure that I wasn't missing some hidden indoctrination or that wasn't some sort of Marxist anything in there hidden. I didn't get that vibe even when I was really specifically looking for it. And I am very fired up right now because I am thinking about all of the people who have sacrificed, who have given the ultimate gift to our country for something like this. I'm pretty sure that this is not what was ever intended. And I am pretty sure that when you see violence on the screen, such as in House of 1,000 Corpses or Evil Dead, and you take your children to see that, but yet you have an issue with literature or an issue with a war movie like this, there's a cognitive disconnect that I don't quite understand. And I am just begging and pleading for all of us to get to a place where we are truly honoring the people that have made these sacrifices to truly make America a place where we are friends again, where we're decent to one another, where if you are going to have a complaint, I don't have a problem if you have a complaint. You are entitled to your complaint, but be thoughtful about it, research it, have a well-thought reason for why it really bothers you or why you do find it offensive, not just use the words that you hear on the news. And I get that this might be divisive, and I get that we might have to cut this part of the podcast out, but I think it's so important that if you're going to have a movie like 1917, and if you're going to watch any war movie, like, I kind of feel like you shouldn't get to celebrate Memorial Day if you are not willing to take a breath before you react to anything, before you use words like indoctrination or Marxist theory or any of these ridiculous things, and think, you know what, America as a whole is not going to be improved by my lack of care that I am putting forth to my children, to my community, to my world. I don't know. I'm on a rant right now because I'm
mad. Love it. If you see this Zoom recording, it's just me vigorously nodding along to everything that Sarah is saying. And what I'm hearing too is it's not like you're saying, I don't like anyone who disagrees with me. What you're saying is there's this very like specific overlap in this Venn diagram of people who both ingest kind of glorified red-shirted violence. And maybe it's video games, maybe it's movies, but that also act like things are very precious. Like we can't have a line that acknowledges failings of our country ever, because there's a difference between criticizing with love, with patriotism, and criticizing with hate and disdain. And that is not what anyone is doing. I think that I agree with you 100%. Whenever we finish watching the movie, one thing I said to my husband is, I just feel like American history and civics education needs to do better. And I'm saying that as a former U.S. history teacher, that I just think that it's so much more important than we really give it credit for. Because I think if you know this history, if you know the individual stories, like in 1917, you are going to be less likely to act like having a poem read to you is the same thing as the struggles that these characters went through. You are not being indoctrinated like the Hitler Youth, like Nazi Youth. You're not. It's not the same thing, and it minimizes to say it is. The same way that whenever people say that I'm a slave to X, Y, or Z, they're acting like, I'm like, that's not the same, and let's not. It's a little different. You're not owned by someone. So
it's a little different, and let's use our words better. I mean, I love what you just said, because like you did a really good job of kind of bringing all of the swirling thoughts that I have in my head together in a way that I think is really important. And what I'm just really hoping today is that when we talk, when we hear all the time, and again, like, you know, the political sphere is starting to ramp up, and so there's more and more of this sort of rhetoric. But when you hear like the political stuff of there are battles on all fronts, I kind of actually feel like we need to take that as our responsibility, our civic duty, our moral responsibility to do the kind of job that these two soldiers were doing. You know, when Schofield and Blake went through this horrible, scary, horrific, terrible journey for these 2 days. They kept doing the job, even though it was hard. They kept thinking of other ways to do it when there were barriers or obstacles in the way. They didn't run away and say, oh, it's too hard to like read a little bit of history in a book. Like it wasn't like, oh, well, like I can't like get through there because there's like bad guys over there. It was like, no, I still have an obligation. I said I would do a thing and I'm going to do it. Let's say the things that we really want. Let's do the things that will help us get there. And I think that if we really want a country where a Korean lady can care so deeply about the country, I get to work here. I get to contribute by raising my family and participating in a community in the way that I can. I hope that everybody can take that responsibility seriously. And by seriously, it means if you're going to have an issue with Amanda Gorman's poem, fine. But just like you were saying, articulate your issue with it. Don't just say things that don't mean anything. Your words matter. Like right now, words are so important. Words matter. individuals matter, our country matters, our children matters. And I think my last and biggest, very simple one-lined takeaway is just this, and that is conversations with our children are really important. So if our children were to see a movie like this, and it sounds like both of us are on the same page that, like, while we see that this movie has merits, it's so graphic that, like, it is not something that any of our children are ready to see in this moment right now. But if they were to see it, I think we could have a very good conversation about, wow, that was really scary. That was hard to see people hurt in that way. Did you know that that's what war might have looked like back then because of the weapons that they had? Or, like, what did you think war was going to be like? Same thing. If you're going to have an issue with a poem, talk about it. Say, like, oh, this line in this poem made me feel kind of uncomfortable. Did it make you feel uncomfortable? What did it make you think? How do you think about this country? And I think these are the things that we can do to honor the people who have served our country in the way that many, many, many people have. And even if we are not taking up actual physical, literal arms ourselves, we can arm our children with education and with the ability to be thoughtful.
I'm just going to repeat what you said, arming our children with education. I think that's brilliant. And I think that it harkens back to the episode about Little Women, where the fight can be fought in many different ways. And I think something I appreciate that you've brought up so much is this recognition that patriotism can look different, that patriotism can be a Korean girl adopted into a family living in Florida who deeply loves her country and holds precious the ability to have free speech. And, like, from the poem in Flanders Fields, the idea that you're picking up that torch and you're not doing it lightly. And so I do want to ask you too, like, how do you think movies like 1917 can not only help inform the way that we act in politics and in our own day-to-day language, but what role do you think movies like this can play in our appreciation of current geopolitical events, like the war in Ukraine, like the policies that people do or don't pick up related to that?
I think what's really hard is a movie that we talk about a lot is Gladiator and the whole, like, are you not entertained situation. And I think that's one area where war movies really have to be careful. Like, suffering is not supposed to be entertaining. What would make me really worried is if all of a sudden we were seeing a lot of, like, real footage from Ukraine and in such a way that was exploiting suffering for the purpose of entertainment versus education. And there is such a fine line. And I think there's such a fine line when you're talking about current movies, current conflicts, that it would be very easy for something to kind of edge more towards propaganda. And anytime you look at any of the war movies, even 1917, if you take a step back, like a little bit further removed from being an audience member, you can see the agenda that is there. You can see the message. And luckily, I like the message in 1917. I don't think it's necessarily a bad one. War sucks. Everybody suffers. Look what these two brave people did. Look at this crazy historical event. But there are other movies where it is sort of like, yes, war is bad, but, like, wasn't it cool to see everybody get blown up? No, it's not cool. Not cool at all. Those are real people and representing people that actually were at that battle. Let's not take artistic license with that. Like, I think if you're going to, you know, convey a historical event such as a war or a battle, I do think it is a lot more important than I think filmmakers always treat it to present things accurately. Like, I don't need it to be more bloody than it was. I do think there's a really important balance between reflecting what actually historically happened, using things that we can actually verify in multiple ways, and not making people suffering somebody's entertainment. And then third point is making sure that our message is not to entertain, not to sort of lead somebody in one political direction or another, but just to present, look, this is what happened. People suffered. What can we learn about it?
And to your point that you made about conversations with your children matter, if people are having a hard time this Memorial Day thinking about those things, or if they feel like there was a gap in their own education and the power there, what are some screen sparks that we can offer them as jumping off points to have those conversations either with other people or even just with yourself after watching something that doesn't tell you what to think? It's asking you to think and remember.
There are many types of violence, slapstick, comedy, sci-fi, superhero, horror, war, and more. And do you feel that all violence should be treated the same? And I guess a follow-up to that is, if you feel that there have been gaps in your knowledge, where can you yourself pick a corner of American or human history to sort of investigate on your own so that you can impart that knowledge either to your kids or just to kind of keep it precious for yourself?
That's a great point. That's a great point. And I think movies can be a good jumping off point for that because we usually do end up doing a little bit of research. Another screen spark that just kind of had me thinking was the specific incident when Blake is dying from a stab wound and he's asked, am I dying, to Schofield? And Schofield admits, yes, I think you are. And I don't know. I think that that moment got to some essential humanity for me. And so my question is, how do you know, when do you say yes and admit to someone that things are not good for them? And what would you personally do? And I think it's just one of those ways that war movies can kind of crystallize a lot of human experiences.
Then the last one, which I also love this question, but do war movies make you feel more or less optimistic about the human condition? I think when you think about war and conflict and suffering, these unfortunately are all uniquely human experiences. Other animals don't exactly experience the same sort of level and scale of conflict that we sort of create for ourselves. And I think that that's a really important message. My final thing is just, it is Memorial Day weekend. And I think I urge everybody to, before you go do your things, and hopefully you do have the day off, but, you know, because we all need a little bit of rest. But before you go do your things, take a minute, think about what it might have been like to be a soldier, if you haven't been or if a family member hasn't. And then think about something really wonderful in your life that you think that you get to experience because of what a soldier or many soldiers have done. I think it's the very least that we can do. I think if we can take that little bit of quiet reflectiveness, we will honor those who have done things that maybe we weren't brave enough or able to do or just haven't chosen to do. And I think that's incredibly important and valuable, no matter what side of the political area you're on. That doesn't matter.
Thank you for letting us share our screens with you this week. We hope that you keep watching for the meaning behind the screen. Don't forget to like and subscribe to Screen Cares wherever you listen to your podcasts. Check out our show notes for great info and to visit our website, www.screencares.com, or check out our social media pages for great resources.